good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink and Alex the intern. Lauren Landis emailed Alex.
You're listening to Lambda
interviewed Alex, or emailed Alex and Patty. I didn't get the email, but he's somewhere. Where is he?
He's at a family reunion.
Oh, okay.
And of course I told him that, you know, he and Danny should expect no attention whatsoever.
Right.
Because Gabrielle will be the star.
Oh, of course.
You know, they'll forget Danny and Laurent's names. You know.
I do. You can friend us on Facebook, download podcasts of the show at lambdaweekly.com. Last week's show is not up yet. It will be next week because Alex wasn't here last week. Laurent recorded it. He's not here today. It'll be up eventually.
It'll be up next week.
It'll be up eventually. I just saw this real strange little article today. Do you remember Thomas Beatty? Thomas Beatty is the man who gave birth.
Yes.
And he appeared on Oprah, transgender, female to male. Obviously had his gender marker changed because he married his wife. Then he got pregnant. Or no, did he marry his... Yes. How did he get pregnant then? If he was married,
I was
going to
ask that.
I'm not sure. Anyway, he is due to give birth any day now to his third child.
His third.
He has a daughter, Susan, who's two, a son, Austin, who's one, and he has his first child. Now, here's my question. Alex and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. Is he actually transgender?
I say yes.
Okay.
Because his gender identity is male, regardless of what his body says.
Okay.
And then he keeps having children. You know what I meant.
and maybe that's another description of what transgender is, that his gender identity is actually kind of a pan-gender?
It could very well be. Yeah, we'd have to ask him.
I'm not criticizing. I'm saying this is one that I think, if it confuses us a little bit, I think it probably confuses people who haven't thought about this at all. It probably confuses them a lot. And I'm just asking, mm-hmm. What is the gender identity there? If somebody has had children three times and identifies as male, that's not something most men do. I mean, Laurent did, but... he's different. No, he didn't carry the child, obviously. So
he carries the child now.
He does carry the child now.
And that child's getting heavier.
And it was just one little story that I saw this week that just... I saw that and I went, huh, isn't that interesting? In order to carry the child, he stopped taking male hormones, so he is physically... His body is acting more like a woman's body now.
Well, you know, many transgender people whose gender identity perhaps does not, doesn't match their bodies, choose to have no operations whatsoever.
And that's true.
And they're called transgender people. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons for that. Many are
health reasons.
Lots of health reasons. It just might not be even feasible for a person to undergo the surgeries required. And it's not just one surgery.
Sure.
It's a series of surgeries. And, you know, and another consideration might be I'm happy just the way I am, mm-hmm. as are many people who are intersex, mm-hmm. where, well, the only folks demanding that they be either an F or an M are other people. And if you're fine in your body and you happen to have ambiguous genitalia or, you know, something that's healthy and functional, why would you muck with that, mm-hmm. when you have a lot of risk for surgery? So, a lot of people choose not to do it.
You know, and I'm just bringing this case up just because, isn't that interesting, having a third child? But he is married, and he's married to a woman. So if he's married to a woman, and I forgot where they live, but it's not an estate that allows same-sex marriage, so his gender marker was changed, so he is legally a man. So,
but if he's married
case.
To a woman,
uh-huh.
why is she not having the children?
Do you know, they addressed that. I think she can't.
That's a good reason.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. So he must have gotten pregnant with artificial insemination, but after they were married, even, you know, it wasn't one of those had the sex change and then oops, all of a sudden I'm pregnant. anyway, that's. No other information on
Wait,
that.
Wait, can we check on Alex's mic? Can you hear it pretty well?
I'm hearing it here, yes.
Okay, I read on iTunes the one comment on our podcast is about that mic.
I didn't even notice we had a comment.
and it is showing up today. It doesn't always. Sometimes that mic's just
It's what we get when we get community radio.
It is.
So, yeah, you should pledge.
Next week we do start our pledge drive. Gay marriage is coming to more and more places. In the United Kingdom this week, a government leader, and they have a new conservative government in Great Britain, a new conservative leader said that full marriage equality will come to the UK before the next general election, which means within the next few years, because they did just have a general election.
Well, and you know, in the UK, there is the Conservative Party, the Liberal Democrats, mm-hmm. and the Labour Party. And Labour's been in for a long time and such. But if you go to their platforms, and you can find them on the BBC, their PDF files, the Conservative Party, which is the most of right-wing of all, calls for marriage equality.
Well, and they're the ones in power now. And
exactly.
It was
that's, so they're farthest right folks.
That's what I'm saying. This is a government leader now is saying that there will be full marriage equality in the UK before the next general election.
And Scotland called for it this week.
And the way Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales, they have some independence that they could enact full marriage equality even sooner.
Right. It's not unlike we would have states. It's not a proper analogy, but Scotland's had same-sex civil union since 2005, and there's a push now to legislate full marriage equality. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. But in South America, that's where the action is right now. This is just amazing. In 1 week, okay, Argentina legalized same-sex marriage. A little bit over a week ago, they signed it into law this week, their presidency. Big formal signing ceremony. So gay marriage legal in Argentina, right next door in Chile. They immediately said same-sex marriages that are performed in Argentina will not be recognized in this country. And the next day, a civil union bill was introduced into the Chilean parliament. That's an interesting reaction. In Uruguay, they've had civil unions since 2007. Monday, they started discussing upgrading to full marriage. Paraguay, which used to be a fascist state, early 90s, they overthrew that government. They are now discussing full marriage. Although the vice president of the country, he came out against the proposal, giving two very good reasons. First of all, he's against it because he's Catholic, and second, it's inappropriate to legislate for a small group. Now, my translation I'm getting from Miguel, who I live with, is Bolivian, and he was helping me translate. I didn't see any of this in any English language press, but it's inappropriate to legislate for a small group. So what he's saying is it is inappropriate for a government to pass laws to protect a minority.
I think that's exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
So, in other words, if the Catholic Church is a minority and Catholics are a minority in a country, we should pass no laws to protect them.
Apparently. Yeah. That seems to be what he's saying.
Okay. One of the things that in all of the Argentina laws, law articles that came out, they were saying first time in South America that there's same-sex marriage, although it is for an entire country, although there is in Mexico City, which is Latin America, but also some states in Brazil. And then they were saying civil unions in Uruguay, and some were saying in Colombia. My reading of Colombia is it's not really a civil union, but they've passed some laws over the last few years that allow same-sex couples to adopt, to allow them to inherit, to allow them to do certain other things.
So it's a piecemeal of the rights.
I think so.
Maybe along the lines of a domestic partnership.
And maybe what you need to do is register in order to get these rights or something. I'm not getting it. Some states in Brazil that have same-sex marriage is what they're calling it. I hadn't seen those pass, but maybe a few states do have something that's equivalent to that. But here's the one that I had never seen before. And I went to Ecuador's actual website talking about it. Apparently they approved a new constitution in 2009. Civil unions at the time were approved. I hadn't heard that.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. But at the same time, the country banned same-sex marriage.
Interesting.
That it says that marriage is between a man and a woman, but civil unions are the, you know, for same-sex couples, basically, is the
equivalent. They're writing the whole separate but equal.
Apparently they are. Here's the one that I found most interesting, though. Bolivia. The vice president came out.
Came out?
Not yet. No, not yet. He came out not against same-sex marriage. He said it's not a priority in our country. But what's interesting about this is his name is Linera, and he lives with Morales, who's the president, as well as Coque Huanca, who is the foreign minister. The three of them share the presidential palace. Three of them are unmarried. And when Morales was sworn in, and again, this was not reported in the English language press.
It should be,
but Miguel and I went to one of the local newspapers, and he showed me where it was saying. When they questioned Morales, who is single, and said, who's going to be your first lady? He pointed to Linera and said, she will.
Oh, my.
So,
see, I'm surprised that wasn't reported here.
I am, too. However, it is now.
Breaking news here.
But anyway, in South America, the more countries that start passing these laws, the harder it becomes for other countries to defend their not passing them. The more ridiculous the United States looks with our patchwork of laws when Argentina has it, when Uruguay has it, when, you know, most of the European Union has same-sex marriage.
Well, basically, north of us, it's national law. Mm-hmm. It's federal law for marriage equality in Canada. Mm-hmm. Mexico City has marriage, so you know, we're surrounded by it.
We are surrounded by it.
And the same holds true then for the military as well.
It's because we're taking over the world.
Not yet.
Some would like to do that, I think.
We're recruiting too while we're at
it. Yeah, not yet.
Oh, I was going to say there's news this week that the Chief Justice of the Massachusetts Supreme Court, Margaret Marshall, who wrote the landmark ruling making the state the first to legislate gay marriage, or marriage equality, as we often say, is stepping down and retiring from her position. Her husband has Parkinson's, so she's going to leave her job and be with him. And something interesting happened to me this week on this very story. Uh-huh. I have a Gmail account, and I got an email from somebody who thinks I'm somebody else.
I love it when that happens.
I know, and oftentimes you have to tell them over and over, I'm not your Aunt Patty. I'm not. I don't know you.
I like it better when they call, because you're like, no, really, I don't.
But I've over the years, there's a lot of Patty Finks out there, apparently. And anyway, so this person lives in South Africa, at where the good Chief Justice is from, actually. She's born in South Africa, and was corresponding with a Patty Fink who had sent him an article about her retiring. And he's, you know, responded back to this other Patty Fink saying, well, Margie's already written me about it, that she's retiring. So they must be friends. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got a really nice note back. From this guy saying, well, thanks for writing this. Don't know how this happened, you know. Unlike some of the some of the people that have to keep going, no, and your real Aunt Patty's not getting this email with all this family news.
Yeah, one of the things that the Chief Justice said on her retirement, they asked her, of course, about her landmark ruling. And she said, you know, I really only considered it just like any other lawsuit. She said after the case was heard, there were a couple of other smaller cases that were being heard that day, so the courtroom cleared out. But to those people who were still sitting in the courtroom, what came right after it was equally important to them. And I listened to those and ruled on those with the exact same amount of fairness and listened as intently. And, you know, I was wondering, she does know, doesn't she, that this ruling of hers is what she'll be remembered for. It is what was reported when mm-hmm. she retired. Had she not written that ruling, her retirement would not have made news outside of Massachusetts. But it was an interesting comment, I thought, because what it said was, I'm glad that you appreciate this ruling, or don't, but, you know, I ruled on everything the same way. And what she was really trying to tell people, I think, was, of course it was an important ruling, but I used the same amount of fairness in ruling on everything.
Well, and she did note, too, she says, I worry when people of influence use vague, loaded terms like judicial activist to skew public debate or to intimidate judges. I worry when judicial independence is seen as a problem to be solved and not a value to be cherished.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, she was she'll certainly go down in the, you know, history books for this ruling, and I'm sure many others as well, but this one certainly brought her national attention. Yeah,
that was the one that that will have repercussions nationwide, because every other state that has ruled on marriage equality has quoted her opinion.
Exactly.
They've had to.
And I feel very special that I don't know someone who actually knows her.
Well, keep in touch with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's too bad you didn't. Yeah, actually, contact him. Ask him how to get in touch with her, because I'd love to have her on the show.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. Yeah. One more little marriage equality thing before we stop for a break. The ACLU in Montana has sued on behalf of 7 Montana couples. They're not suing for marriage equality because, obviously, in Montana, like in most other states, they've outlawed marriage. So they're being very specific. We are not suing for marriage equality. However, what your marriage law does is it prevents and violates the state's constitutional protections to rights to privacy, dignity, and the pursuit of life's basic necessities, as well as its guarantees of equal protection and due process. Now, how are we going to change this? So what it's saying is basically that this law is unconstitutional. One of the 7 couples who is suing said, this is one of the partners talking about her partner. She said, Denise has stood with me through 56 brain surgeries and over 300 spinal taps. Yet to Montana, we're nothing more than mere strangers. Knowing we have legal protections for our family sure would make it easier on both of us the next time I have a medical crisis. I would think it wouldn't just make it easier on them. It would make it easier on the state and the hospital and everybody else involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But so ACLU representing 7 couples in Montana, that'll be an interesting case to follow to see where a case like that goes in a conservative state whose constitution is very clear on offering equal protection, due process, right to privacy. You know, a small conservative state, that right to privacy and the pursuit of life's basic necessities. I think that's an interesting one.
That may be a turn of phrase that's in their Constitution.
It is. Yeah. They're quoting from the Constitution.
Right.
And it's interesting that that's there. To see how that'll be interpreted, whether it's, yes, that does apply to all people, or, oh yeah, but we didn't mean you. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
If it's time to get rid of your old gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can help. There's still a market for those old vehicles, and if you donate it, you're helping support quality programming here on KNON. Just call 877-KNON-AUTO or go online at knon.org. We'll take care of everything from free pickup to sending you your tax paperwork. 877-KNON-AUTO.
The hottest polka party of the summer is Sunday, August 8th, when KNON presents the KNON Ogtoberfest at the Sons of Herman Hall in Dallas. Come out and join Polka Jennifer and David of North Texas Polka Radio for a summer polka celebration KNON benefit. You've been asking for it, and so now we are doing it. Be there for great polka music from the Harvesters and the Jody McCula Orchestra. There'll be an accordion jam session in the bowling alley downstairs. Tasty food will be provided by the Bavarian Grill and Kolache Station. Advanced tickets are available now at KNON.org, the Kolache Station, and Bavarian Grill in Plano. Bring the whole family for the joy of polka on a Sunday afternoon at the historic Sons of Herman Hall, a true Texas dance hall in Dallas. It's fine music, food, and fun with the Harvesters, Jody McCula Orchestra, an accordion jam, Kolache Station, the Bavarian Grill, and North Texas Polka Radio at the KNON Oktoberfest, Sunday, August 8th. Doors open at 1 p.m. and music starts at 2. The Sons of Herman Hall is located at 3414 Elm Street in Dallas. The number at the Sons is 214-747-4422. For more information, KNON.org or 214-828-9500, extension 227.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink and Alice the intern, and Lauren will be back with us next week.
Whitett Combs, which is a GLBT marketing firm, does a lot of polling, in fact, in our community. And it's where a lot of the studies that come about focusing on our community nationwide and in various states comes about. They've come out with a new projection of what our buying power is as a community, what the LGBT buying power is. And they've done this every year. The 2009 number was $732 billion. This year's is $743 billion. So we've gone up $11 billion.
That's interesting that during a recession it's still gone up.
Right, right. But he often notes, though, that there's a stereotype out there that somehow LGBT people are more wealthier. But he says that stereotype actually comes from the lower percentage of gay households with children, and especially for gay males, having both partners in the workplace with no children makes for a higher per capita household income. Because remember, women make about 74 cents on the dollar than a man makes. So two men together in a household would kind of crank that number up.
Well, and they're talking about spending power. I guess in surveys, if you have children, you're still spending money, putting it into the economy, but I guess if you're spending it on the child, it's allocated differently?
Well, I just think that there's more to spend on when you have four people versus two people, or five people versus two people.
So they're taking out things like food.
Right. Everything goes up. The size of your place, you know, your house, your apartment. I mean, everything would go up if you have more people in your household. Certainly, you know, opportunities for a same-sex couple without children to save money is far different from a same-sex couple with children to save, you know. And
but when they're talking about spending power of a gay couple, I guess what they're talking about discretionary spending, I guess. Mm-hmm. So food, housing, things like that is not considered discretionary.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, it's buying power. Yeah. I would assume that means one's, you know, one's income, and I don't know if they compensate for outliers like that, or stuff that you would be expected to spend on. But he does state that the total buying power for all U.S. consumers is estimated at $10 trillion. So while we have basically $750 billion for the LGBT community, so almost one, and there's $10 trillion, so we're basically 7.5% of the buying power in the United States is LGBT people. So I think that's kind of interesting.
That is interesting, and I'm wondering if they're compensating for the fact that they don't, that we don't know how many gay people there are, and how do you count some of them who have never signed up for anything gay, have never, you know, don't identify particularly, they blend into the community, and you know.
Mm-hmm. There's never been a definitive count. And surely with the U.S. Census, you know, probably by, 2050, maybe they'll just ask the question.
You know,
how do you self-identify?
Yeah, and do you think that'll, that still won't get an accurate count, because there'll still be lots of people who won't answer.
Sure.
There was a survey of the top 20 LGBT cities that came out recently, and it was based on number of gay couples that self-identified as, or that the census identified.
In 2000, I guess.
In 2000. Austin came out as number 19 and was the only Texas city that was there. In the last survey, Fort Worth came out ahead of Dallas, which was kind of interesting. But in this one, Dallas and Fort Worth are off the survey. But cities like Madison, Wisconsin was up there because it's a per capita.
Mm-hmm.
San Francisco was up there, but it identified in San Francisco something like 7.5 households per thousand. And I'm thinking, huh?
that doesn't seem
if
right.
It was per hundred. But in the way it was identifying the number of households, it's, you're completely discounting that there are an awful lot of single gay people out there. Single gay people tend to move to big cities, and this is completely off.
Well, I would speculate, now we don't know this, but I would speculate that there are far, far more single LGBT people than there are coupled LGBT people.
Of course there are.
I mean, far, far more. I would say maybe, I don't know what the numbers are for straight people even, but, you know, a quarter of us maybe in couples, a third. But I don't think it's, I think there's way more out there that are not getting counted.
Oh, I'm even thinking it's maybe 10 to 25%.
Oh, really?
Maybe 1/10 to 1/4. Yeah. I think starting at a quarter is even guessing high. Especially if you count in the number of just young gay people out there.
Unattached.
Yeah. So
certainly not living in the same household.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was just.
I'm living with my parents, so I would.
See, you'd be one of them.
Yeah, and even, and I'm moving in August, and I'm going to be living with a roommate, a female roommate at that.
Yeah, so he would, they would never count him, or even suspect that he was. So how do you even count that? You know, just the idea, and the survey was just, I thought it was odd because it was showing itself as if these numbers really mean anything, and it wasn't until you read down that you saw, okay, this is where the most the highest percentage in that city of gay couples live. You know, does that really show anything?
Right. And that's who people, and again, this is all about questions. Like, we get to see these little poll questions on, say, CNN, where they have that little quick vote and you can click one or the other. What does this tell us? It tells us that of the people who read this page in this moment, mm-hmm. and saw this question and chose to answer it. that's who said this.
Who
so
cares enough to click
exactly, and how many people saw it and didn't? You know, we don't know that. But so it's really the number of people who on the census chose to self-identify and knew how to do that.
And that's part of it. And knew how to do that,
so that they would be counted as a same-sex couple. Mm-hmm. So if you thread that needle, then you get this number.
And Miguel and I, on the census, answered in a way that we would be identified as a same-sex couple.
So that you could be two people who were gay.
So that we could be counted as two people who were gay, even though, by nobody's mistake at all...
You're not involved with each other.
Are we a couple? But we are counted as a couple because we answered the census that way. It was self-identifying, and as I asked the people from the census when they were here, okay, so if this is all about how you self-identify, you have this question about age. I do not self-identify as somebody in my 50s. I self-identify in my 30s. Will they find it strange when I put down, born in 1953, age 35?
30. Yes, I think they will.
Why will do they ask your problem? Age if they say what, when you were born?
I don't know.
So you can just put down whatever you want.
That's
what I say.
That's what,
they can do the math if they want.
Kind of what I thought. Why don't we go to the entertainment report? And in today's entertainment report, I have two items. One is that Sarah Gilbert, you know, Darlene Connor mm-hmm. on Roseanne, she's going to executive produce and co-host a new talk show for moms on CBS. It's kind of going to kind of be The View. What was interesting about this, though, is that the others were all identified as, you know, Julie Chen, and it, who's married to so-and-so. Holly Robinson Peach, Sharon Osbourne.
Sharon Osbourne?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wait, for moms?
Uh-huh. Didn't say it's... good moms. and Marissa Janet Winokur and Leah Remini, who is married to... However, when Gilbert was identified, they did not identify her partner.
Allison Adler.
They didn't identify her. Gilbert is the executive producer of this show. And that's what I find interesting. But CBS has never been a leader in showing gay couples, gay characters, gay anything. In fact, I can't even think of a CBS show with a gay person on it. I mean, other than, what's his name?
I'm trying to think of a CBS show.
Well, How I Met Your Mother, what's his name?
Doogie Howser.
Yeah, Doogie. But he doesn't play
Neil
a gay
Patrick
character.
Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris, thank you. He doesn't play a gay character on that, though.
Well, and Sarah and Allison each, together as a couple, they have a child, but they each carried one.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. you know, they've been a long-established couple.
Yeah, yeah. It's just interesting that all of the other, you know, it would be fine if it was just, you know, Sharon Osbourne who's done blah, 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 and Leah Remini, who starred in King of Queens, and Marissa Janet Winokur, who came to fame in Hairspray. She was the original. And that would be fine. You don't have to identify somebody's partners. It was kind of like when the WNBA started playing, and it was, oh, and there's Patty Fink. Patty Fink is married to so-and-so and has three children. And there's this one. And so-and-so is married to so-and-so and has... And that's how they would announce it. And so-and-so. Nothing. And that's how you knew who the lesbian players were.
Because they wouldn't announce their partner.
They did not announce who the husband was. But they were so careful. And there, can you imagine NBA players, you know, when during the announcing of a game, and
if they rattled off their entire family,
and this is Larry Bird, player number so and so, who's married to so and so and has three children. They just don't do that. This week, Elton John was in Tucson performing.
Sir Elton John.
Yes, yeah, Sir Elton John. Sir Elton John, my butt. Now, a couple of weeks ago, more than a couple of months ago, he performed at Rush Limbaugh's wedding, and everybody thought...
His wedding number what? Four?
Wedding number five? Or seven or 12. Who cares?
He enjoys getting married.
He does.
Because it's sacred, right? Or what?
Yeah, exactly. But he, you know, of course he angered a lot of people by performing at Rush's wedding, but his defense or his excuse or his whatever was, first of all, he was paid $1 million. The $1 million is supposed to go to the Elton John AIDS Fund. Most people thought $1 million in the Elton John AIDS Fund is better off than in Rush Limbaugh's pocket. The other thing that Elton was saying was, you know, that's how we make allies that way. You know, why? I was given the opportunity. Why not take it? When I go to an event, I present myself as an out gay person, and I'd be talking to people who you don't usually come in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right on that. It was also a peculiar choice to perform at Rush Limbaugh's wedding. I'm sorry. A couple of years ago, he got into a little bit of publicity trouble when he decided to perform with Eminem, who had very anti-gay lyrics and... you know, and again, forming allies, and actually in that case, Eminem doesn't do anti-gay lyrics anymore, and maybe that did have an effect. Well, this time he was in Tucson, and while he was on stage, they said out of nowhere, he started delivering an expletive-deleted rant against the musicians who decided against performing in Arizona. He said, "We're all very pleased to be in Arizona. I've read that some of the artists won't come here. They are bleeping wits. Let's face it, I still play in California," and this is the part that is real interesting that he said. "I still play in California, and as a gay man, I have no legal rights whatsoever. So what's the bleep with these people?"
In California, you actually do have a lot of rights if you're a gay person.
California has domestic partnerships. And, you know, and then he said something about that he's married to his partner, David Furnish.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Their, quote, marriage was in the UK. They do not have marriage equality in the UK. They have about the same thing that you get in California.
And none of which you get in Arizona.
And none of which you get in Arizona. So, you know, he's wrong. Mm-hmm. He's just completely wrong there. And in this case, you know, it's not a gay issue here, but it is. He made it a gay issue. He said, "I still play in California, and as a gay man, I have no legal rights whatsoever." And I think even the right wing would dispute that one.
Mm-hmm. I think he's wrong, too.
I think the left wing would dispute that one. You know, the pro-marriage equality people in California would argue, because what it went back to when after Prop 8 passed, it went back to the domestic partnerships that they had. Those legal rights were not all taken
and
away.
And you can't get fired in California for being gay. Right, and you can't, you know, they have a lot of rights in California.
So, you know, this one, the Rush Limbaugh thing, I think it pushed a lot of us over going, huh, what's going on here? But with this one, real odd. One other thing, Lady Gaga performed here this week, Thursday and Friday, at the American Airlines Center.
Did you go?
No, I didn't. But
did you go, Alex?
No, I wanted to, but yeah.
My whole office went. Apparently, she did a
shout-out. Your whole office. He works at the Dallas Voice.
But, yeah, exactly. But they
the
all
whole
went.
Office.
They all went. Apparently, they did a shout-out to the Roundup from the stage like four times.
Really?
And she showed up at the Roundup Friday night.
Briefly. My understanding is that she had to leave because her limo was blocking
that
the
was
lane.
Thursday.
Okay.
Friday night,
she did
Friday
go.
Night, they arranged. They got the limo in, and she performed. She was having a great time.
On the dance floor.
On the dance floor. And she was saying, you know, Dallas is the first place that recognized me and supported me. I didn't realize that she had this.
It's because we are that awesome.
But apparently when she was just, you know, a new performer, this is where she got a whole bunch of her, the part of her start. You had fun.
Oh, well, we got a break coming.
Yes, we do. So, do you want to talk about that after the break? Because we can go right to the break.
Let's do the break.
Let's do that, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
KNON's Summer Pledge Drive is coming in August. Right now, you can make an early pledge to your favorite show. Pledge right now to KNON.org during KNON's web drive. The KNON web drive is now until July 31st. All pledges received will count towards the Summer Pledge Drive goals. If you pledge now at KNON.org, you can help your favorite program reach their goal early. Shorten your favorite program's pledge drive by pledging early online at KNON.org. Enough online donations and we can have a shorter on-air pledge drive. It's up to you. Pledge now at KNON.org to our first ever KNON web drive.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
Those Darn Heterosexuals. Tammy Ann Wilson got married to Eugene Alton Patton Jr. in 2008. 5 months later, he was deployed to Iraq for 13 months. While he was away, she had numerous affairs, and last September, she married another soldier, using a fake Social Security number on her marriage license application. When Eugene got home in January, as we could all guess he would, things seemed fine, and she managed to juggle two husbands until March. When Eugene learned the truth, he reported her to his commanding officer, who promptly had her second marriage annulled. But that wasn't enough. He went to the police, and now she's charged with bigamy, forgery, and attempt to influence a public servant.
Nice. Heterosexual Nikisha Lewis of Rock Hill, South Carolina, is the legal guardian of a 15-year-old girl, and a very fine guardian she is. After taking the girl out partying, the 15-year-old fell asleep. As she slept, Lewis tried to trade the girl for crack. One of the men at the party turned her in.
And a man paid $200 for a woman he contacted on Craigslist to come over and perform a sexy dance, but he had second thoughts after she appeared older than advertised. He asked for his $200 back, and when she refused, he called the police to help get his money back. Ladera Ranch, California police didn't act because apparently there is no law against a sexy dance and no law about truth in advertising on Craigslist. this week's
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
You had one more.
Yeah, we had kind of a fun week for those who follow Sarah Palin, and she's made up some words now. And as we know, you know, refudiate became a word in Sarah Palin's world. She tweeted it and immediately took it down and followed with something else. And I loved one of the reports I read on the AP or somewhere that said, you know, and she compared herself to Shakespeare, mm-hmm. that Shakespeare made up words too. So now there's all this Shakespalin and all of this stuff. But one of the news reports I read said, you know, Palin's original post of refudiate was deleted, and some of Shakespeare's writings are missing too. Completely lost. But Andy Borowitz, the humor writer, did a piece on her, saying, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin today defended her use of the word refudiate, telling her critics, look it up in the fictionary. And, you know, she actually did use it again prior to the post, in another occasion on Fox when she was speaking with Sean Hannity. She used the word refudiate. So, anyway, while claiming that refudiate is a real word, she reserved her right to make up new words in the future. Everyone makes up words. Shakespeare, George W. Bush, Levi Johnston. She said, the only person I know who doesn't do it is my husband Todd, who doesn't speak. She said, this is from the Borowitz report again. Governor Palin also lashed out at those who criticized her use of the word refudiate, calling them incoherent. And if the presidential election were held today, Sarah Palin would defeat Barack Obama. That's according to the new poll published in Mayan Prophecy Weekly. And her first official act will be to cancel the agreement between nouns and verbs.
You'd make school easier.
Well, I visited the Funny Times, which is a publication we get at home and have for years, and also Urban Dictionary to find some new words that are out there that people are using that I think are kind of humorous. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's one. Netflix. It's the time between the time period between home-delivered DVDs. Not to be confused with night flicks, which are dreams so complex in plot and rich in production value that they seem like a feature-length film. We've all had these, a nonversation, a completely worthless conversation wherein nothing is illuminated, explained, or otherwise elaborated upon. Kind of like when David talks about taxes, and especially taxes in New York.
See, what did I say when we were talking about that a few weeks ago? Patty wasn't here. It's a good thing she's out of town for this week's big news.
Nonversation typically occurs at parties, bars, and other events where a meaningful conversation is nearly impossible. So, parade maker. That's the driver and or the car that goes consistently under the speed limit, causing a backup of 20-plus cars, creating frustration in your ability to be where you want to be on time. I also say the pace car when it's a cop car, right? I like this one, yellular. The loudness one adopts in response to a bad cell phone connection in the misguided hope that talking louder will improve the conversation and the connection. Many of the in our community especially have this, a canniversary, a year from the date on which you were fired from your job.
Ah, I celebrated my first year of that.
Your canniversary?
Uh-huh.
Another favorite, clapathy, when an audience grows weary of clapping, either at a ceremony or a musical performance. You know that moment where it's gone on?
And your hands are like
really,
like,
yeah, please.
Just a couple more here. A mouse potato is someone who spends all their time on the computer looking at Alex.
Whoa.
Surfing the net or playing games, similar to a couch potato. And a social fruit fly, like a social butterfly, but without any charm or beauty. An unwanted pest. Kittens and puppies, one of my favorites. When it's raining lightly.
Wow. I would never thought of that one.
Okay, two more. Stored herbs, snacks or food samples that a grocery store will serve at various locations in order to tempt the patrons into buying something they weren't planning on. Pizza, chips and dip, sausage. Usually happens on the weekend. Mm-hmm. Stored herbs. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites, Freudenschad. Instead of Schadenfreude, right? Freudenschad is the dissatisfaction, unhappiness, or pain as the result of someone else's good fortune. So instead of Schadenfreude, where we delight in someone's bad fortune, Freudenschad.
Okay, now those stored herbs.
Yes.
They could provide an entire meal for us college students.
That or ramen, right?
Exactly.
Okay, but once you're beyond college, does any of it ever look tempting?
Oh, sometimes.
Really?
I think.
Well, I know the other day.
Not in my supermarket.
They had fresh bread out. Like, really. Like, they had just put it out. And that was tempting.
Huh.
Besides it being tasty.
And free.
And free.
Let's see. What else happened in the news? This one I like. It's from the American Family Association. They have called for a boycott of Home Depot this week.
Home Depot? Do they go there already?
Apparently. Here's why they're boycotting Home Depot. The retail chain has sponsored several gay pride events. They sponsored pride events in Nashville and Durham, North Carolina. But here's the other part that they're telling people to boycott, because they offer domestic partner benefits. Now, Allison and I were talking about this before the show a little bit, and we were saying, you know, I understand the boycotting the retail chain because it sponsored some gay pride events. If a company had sponsored anti-marriage events, like when Cinemark sponsored, or the president of Cinemark sent some money to Prop 8, everybody was saying, don't go see Milk, which came out right at that time. Don't go see Milk at a Cinemark theater. You know, they're sponsoring anti-marriage amendments, and then they want to make money off of this. No.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. So the sponsoring the gay pride events, I get it with that. I disagree with it, obviously, but yeah. I get it. But the offering domestic partner benefits part.
God, that would be thousands and thousands of companies. Are they going to try and target all of these?
Well, I hope so.
That would really stretch their... I mean, where would they shop?
Exactly.
Amway?
Right. Yeah. But I think there's a difference in these two different reasons. One is for something that I get what the boycott is over, or what they're angry over. You're sponsoring an event that targets people who are against us. But the domestic partnership benefits, that's something completely different. When something like the American... Leave Act, American Family...
Family Medical and Leave Act.
Family Medical and Leave Act. When that was sponsored, when that was enacted...
I'm just your talk check.
Thank you. I don't remember anybody in the gay community saying, that's mean-spirited, I'm going to boycott companies that, because it came from somewhere, companies were already doing this, I'm going to boycott companies that give this benefit to some of their employees. I don't remember the gay community getting together and saying, I don't want those employees having this benefit. I mean, anybody I know who I've ever worked with, gay or straight, who had to take off because, without pay, by the way, is what that law is. But
it just means you can leave and go away unpaid and still have your job when you come back.
And still have a job. That's all it is. I don't remember anybody saying, I don't want them to have that benefit, but you know what? It benefited straight people. Because a lot of companies that offered it didn't offer it to their gay employees. But I don't remember the gay community getting together and saying, that's discrimination, that's a bad thing. People said, yes, that's a good thing for companies to offer. And for them to come, the AFA to come and say, no, boycott Home Depot because they offer insurance benefits to the people who live in the houses of, that just shows hatred.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And there's a difference between boycotting for that reason and boycotting for sponsoring Pride events.
Or taking out, you know, full-color ads in newspapers or magazines or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I have to agree. And if you were going to boycott all of the companies in this country that have domestic partnership benefits, you would have to boycott. You would be left with really nothing. You'd get ExxonMobil.
That would be it.
You know?
You could drive your car. Although not really, because the car companies offer. If you got your car from a company that didn't offer those benefits, or didn't offer, then you could fill your car up with ExxonMobil. It's true. Seriously, who's left for them to boycott? Because companies are way ahead of the government in offering benefits. The company that I worked for, that I did have my canniversary with, they offered partnership benefits and domestic benefits for people in households. And the reason that they gave, it was a very non-doctrinaire or whatever type of a reason. We want the people who live in the houses of people who work for us to be covered, because that way we're more assured that you're going to get to work. You know, it was a very, we're not judging one way or the other. If a person that you live with is sick and you have to be out taking care of them, it's going to hurt us more. Oh, and by the way, it doesn't cost us anything to offer this, and the more people that are on our insurance policy, the cheaper our insurance gets
mm-hmm.
per person.
Exactly.
So, you know what? Stop complaining about it. And, you know, and that was really their attitude, that we offer this, it doesn't cost us anything to offer, it benefits us in this way, and that way, and the reasons, the ways that it benefited them, they gave, were so non-political. It was, it benefits us this way, benefits us that way.
It just justifies Kohlberg's theory of moral development, mm-hmm. you know, where you can say, yes, something's wrong for very different reasons.
Yeah.
Depends on where you are.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And the people who offered this, I'm not at all saying that they did it for the wrong reasons. I mean, they did it for very, very corporate reasons. I'm saying the reasons that they gave to the company in general, you know,
sure.
like, and to their shareholders, because they didn't want to have to justify it, and they didn't want to have to justify a corporate position.
You know, years ago, the CEO of a company I worked for at that time, when we would have ICE days in Dallas, would, you know, we'd do a whole phone tree and make sure people didn't come in. And it wasn't so much that he was concerned about, you know, getting hurt, I guess, but it was all of the time people were going to take to go get their cars fixed and all of that after the fact, because they tried to get in for that one morning.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. We'll be experiencing far more than this 4 hours, you know, until the ice melts, for weeks while people... You know, and if they, heaven forbid, they do get injured, then we'll be experiencing that loss, too. So stay home.
And he's right.
Yeah.
He really is right. Don't Ask, Don't Tell is in court again. And the reason it's in court is because Log Cabin filed a lawsuit against the government. The government has to defend the law. So it was the Obama administration defending Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and Republicans charging to get rid of it. Interesting arguments that they gave. You know, Log Cabin, of course, used all the arguments that they should have used about how it hurts. It hurts preparedness. It hurts number of people that we have available for the military. It costs us a lot to train some people who come out later, and, you know, they don't come out necessarily before they're 18. They come out, you know, in their early 20s. They're already in the, you know, all those arguments that on why it's such a bad law. The Obama administration actually just wants this lawsuit thrown out. And they use several arguments that are kind of interesting. They really didn't defend the law. They had about the same defense that the Prop 8 people had, which was nothing. But what they, well, they did have nothing.
They read it on the internet.
Yeah. here's what the Obama administration argued. They argued, first of all, that this is better resolved through the political process, meaning, and discounting the courts in a way, saying almost that civil rights have nothing to do with anything that could go through the courts. It should only go through the legislative process.
Which I think is just nuts. And it's such a convoluted thing. And you would think that the right wing, you know, claims this all the time with this activist judge stuff. And then you get somebody like Schwarzenegger in California that says, oh, no, it passed in the legislature. Both chambers of the legislature in California came to my desk to sign, and I vetoed it twice because it should go through the courts.
Right. Right. It's whichever it hasn't gone through.
Yet, right.
Right. And then it went through the courts. And the court said also, okay, no, I meant it had to go to the voters. Right? Now a majority of voters in California actually say that they would vote against Prop 8.
So. Well, it's 52%. You know, you swing the pendulum the other way. It's not a lot of votes.
Yeah, it's not, and it shouldn't rely on something. And in fact, going back to South America, in Costa Rica, actually, a gay marriage law, same-sex marriage law, was supposed to come up for a vote in December, and the Costa Rican Supreme Court has thrown out the referendum. They were going to vote on whether or not. And so at first reading this, you think, oh, they don't want to vote on same-sex marriage. They're throwing it out because they said that the Constitution does not allow people to vote on civil rights.
Which is, I think, the crux of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be voting on other people's rights.
And this vote was sponsored by a group that is made up of Catholic groups, or the Catholic Church, and some evangelical groups. But getting back to that's yours, Patty.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. It was something that came for Patty while she was away, and I forgot to give it to you last week. Getting back to this Don't Ask, Don't Tell lawsuit that Log Cabin Republicans are arguing, the Obama administration said, first of all, that this should be settled through the legislative process. Now, I understand Obama's argument that it shouldn't be settled by him through executive order. His argument was, I could sign it, we could get rid of it today, and the next president comes in, he signs a new. We need to just get rid of it permanently through the legislative process. I understand that argument. He could have done some things like suspend discharges until
like Lieutenant Dan Choi was officially discharged this week.
Yeah. Their other argument, though, was that the two people in question who the suit is actually on behalf of, the government's arguing, well, they're not actual members of Log Cabin. Log Cabin came back and said, how dare you tell us who our members are? Apparently what happened was these two people had not been members of Log Cabin until the suit came about. But you know what? And without them, Log Cabin would have no standing to sue, because you have to sue on behalf of somebody who is affected by a law. Well, you know, I'm half and half on that one. You know, it's not the government's business when they joined.
It's not. It's not. If they joined a minute before the lawsuit was filed, I'd say they're members of Log Cabin. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see any controversy with that.
That's their argument, yeah. Though. Actually, a ruling, of course it won't come down for weeks. It might not come down until after it's settled legislatively anyway. So that's about it for this week's Lambda Weekly. Next week we have...
Pledge Drive.
We have Pledge Drive, and who is our guest? I know we have a guest.
I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Oh. I know we have Louise Young
the following week. Candy Markham next week.
Candy's
boy. Our regular Pledge Drive guest.
That'll be fun.
If you have any questions for Candy, let us know. Go to our Facebook page. Leave us a question. I'll make a note. We need to go. See you next week.